Chapter 41, Emma, 2003. My heart thumping double time, I closed the toilet cubicle and pulled down the seat before dumping my school bag on the floor. Tears pricked my eyes, my limbs shaking from humiliation. It was bad enough that I'd not heard from Luke over Christmas, but this latest betrayal was too much. I heard the swish of the main door open and tried to mask my sniffles into a tissue. A sharp knock on my cubicle door made me jump to my senses.
"Come out, Emma. I need to talk to you."
It was Luke. What was he doing in the girls' toilets? I held my breath, unsure. His anger was apparent by the tone of his voice, but I had a right to be angry too. I blew my nose, blotting the mascara beneath my lids. I had returned to school after closing time, knowing he was staying on late to mark our work. Foolishly, I thought I could win him over.
"I don't want to talk to you," I said, rising from the seat just the same.
I had barely slid the lock across when he pushed open the door and dragged me out.
"You're hurting me," I said, wincing as his fingers bit into my flesh.
"It's nothing compared to what I'll do if you don't drop this."
Spittle laced his words as he pressed his face close to mine. My eyes roamed over the other empty stalls. He was taking a chance, coming in here where anyone could walk in. But an after-school football match had driven any stragglers outdoors. I recoiled from his grip, the fury in his gaze telling me that rational thought was not present. A bright pink flush had risen from the neck of his shirt collar, and his eyes bulged in their sockets as his anger became clear. For the first time in my life, I was scared of him.
"I saw you. With her."
My words trembled as he loomed above me, his muscles taut beneath his shirt. I had gone to his class in the hope of speaking to Luke alone. Finding him alone with another student had been the last thing I had expected to stumble upon. I knew the girl by sight. Her name was Sophie. She must have been only 14 or 15, yet he was leaning over her, his hand guiding hers across the page as she drew. Her long blonde hair shadowed her face, but not enough to disguise the blush rising to her cheeks. I had forgotten my previous promises of discretion as I launched into a tirade. Her eyes wide, the girl had looked at me as if I had lost my mind. Luke lowered his voice to a menacing whisper as the caretaker's whistles echoed from the hall.
"I'm a teacher. It's what I do. Now, I've tried asking nicely. If you don't stop this ridiculous behavior, I'll take things further."
"Like you took things further in the beach hut?"
I asked, hurt casting an edge to my words.
"I know why you're doing this. You're scared of getting too close because of what happened to you when you were young."
Taking a step back, his anger seemed to evaporate at the mention of his shared secret. A cold, thin laugh escaped his lips.
"Do you really think that's why I can't stand you anymore?"
Placing his hand on my shoulder, he pushed me towards the mirror.
"Look at yourself, with your greasy lipstick and cheap perfume. You're pathetic. Why the hell would I be interested in you?"
My stomach churned as I was faced with my reflection. The cosmetics were a Christmas present from Tizzy, and I'd worn them in an effort to win him back. But my attempts at applying it needed practice, and under the strip lighting of the school bathroom, I was reminded of a scene with my mother all over again. The night she left, shoving my face into the mirror, telling me what a pig I had become. Tears streaked down my face as I bore the brunt of Luke's cruelty, each word slicing into my soul. But he was not finished yet.
"You threw yourself at me because you thought sex was the only way of holding on to what we had. But in offering it up on a plate, you lost all my respect."
"No,"
I blurted, swallowing back my tears.
You said if I didn't have sex, that you'd finish it.
Really? Are you sure? Because sex didn't come into the conversation as far as I was concerned.
What? I stuttered, barely able to believe what I was hearing.
When I said I wanted a serious relationship, I was talking about bearing our souls, not our bodies. I asked you to the beach hut so we could talk.
No, I said, searching the corridors of my memory for the truth. You said...
Luke shrugged. I was scared at the prospect of opening up. Most victims of abuse are. But you turned all of that on its head when you locked the door and made it clear what you were really after. I was hardly going to say no.
I pushed my hands to the side of my forehead, trying to extract the memory. Had he actually mentioned sex, or had I misunderstood what he'd said? Please, Luke, I'm sorry. I must have taken what you said the wrong way.
Yes, you did, he said. And while you may think little of your reputation, it's a different case for me. This is my job, my livelihood.
He reached for my throat, grasping hold of my sunflower necklace and giving it a tug. I winced as it snapped under his grasp, and he pocketed the remains.
So quit with following me around and leaving flowers in your wake. You're dumped. Get over it.
You don't mean it, I said, gripping the edge of the sink as he turned away. Luke, are you listening to me?
It's Mr. Priestwood to you,
he replied haughtily, before walking out the door.
Chapter 42 Luke, 2003 I felt the heat of the headmistress's glare long before she summoned me. It felt like a branding iron on the back of my neck. I resisted the urge to turn round until she cleared her throat. I had made it my business to leave my classroom door open after the students had left my class. Such efforts at transparency had come too late, and I could tell by the look on the head's face that word of my run-in with Emma the day before had been spreading. "Luke, can I have a word?" was all she said, and I was brought back to the days when I was the apple of her eye. Back then, being summoned meant extra praise for working hard throughout the year. It was why I had returned here, to the same school I had attended. I didn't need to put in the effort of creating a friendly facade when the groundwork had already been done. And now, not even a year into my new role, I was being called to her office for a telling off. My ego had led me to this point, an inability to resist a schoolgirl's adoration. I may have been the teacher's pet once myself, but I was not beyond reproach. As we marched to her office, I was grateful that most of my students had gone home. I tried not to think about Emma as I steadied my breath, but it was an impossible task. I knew without a doubt that she was the reason for the stringent beckoning, and I had my story prepared. The head teacher's office had not changed much over the years. It still housed an old-fashioned tea's maid in the corner that appeared to be more for decorative than practical use. Mrs. Pritchard used the recently refurbished staff room with the rest of us, taking advantage of the Dolce Gusto coffee machine which was always on the go. A large round clock still kept time on the wall behind her desk, and the same wooden photo frames now held updated snapshots of her brood. On the windowsill, a dusty-looking bonsai plant absorbed the sun through glass that was long overdue a clean. Tiny beads of sweat broke out on my forehead as I sat in the airless room. Having been forced to spend time with my family over the holidays, I had looked forward to returning to work. The question was, would I be staying? By the look on Mrs. Pritchard's face, I was not so sure. She clasped her fingers together, her heavy bosom fighting against the constraints of her blouse as she leaned towards me. "I've called you here to ask you about one of your students, Emma Hetherington." I remained silent, my face impassive as I waited to hear what I was being accused of. "There's no point in beating around the bush, so I'll come straight out with it. What is the nature of your relationship with this young woman?" I inhaled a calming breath through my nostrils, as I prepared my explanation in my head. The same as with all of my students. She turns up for class. I teach her. Why? Because that's not what I've heard. Apparently there was an incident after school last week, and you've been seen together in town. Colchester's not exactly London. I often bump into students when I'm out. I sighed, leaving enough of a gap to make it appear as if I was wrestling with my thoughts. Can I be honest with you? I'd prefer it if you were. I rubbed the side of my neck. I wasn't going to say anything. I'm fairly new to this role, and the last thing I wanted was to be knocking on your door with my problems.
Which are?
She arched an inquiring eyebrow. Emma's got a crush on me. I've done everything I can to dissuade it, but she's totally infatuated. It's even gotten to the point that she's followed me about in town. If I've been seen talking to her outside of school, it's only because I've been gently warning her off.
A crush?
The head folded her arms and gave me a look that suggested she was not quite convinced.
You should have spoken to someone if this has gone so far.
I did, I said, relieved that I'd had the hindsight to talk to my colleagues in the staff room. Lorraine Rugman and Sean Talbot. I mentioned it to them before Christmas.
Hmm, she said. Best you don't leave yourself open to allegations. I'm going to monitor the situation, see how it pans out. Hopefully Emma will get over her infatuation soon.
She gave me another thoughtful gaze.
You're sure you've not done anything to encourage her?
I approached you about Emma's after-school art revision, and you approved it. The minute I had an inkling of her feelings, I brought them to an end. I exhaled an exasperated sigh. Last week, I was talking to one of my students after class. Emma burst in and created a scene. I followed her to the toilets to make sure she was okay, but she was in a dreadful state. She said she didn't want to see me talking to any other girls. I told her she was being ridiculous, that I was a teacher and I treated all my students the same.
And that's all you said? Because she's been off sick all week.
I've got a girlfriend. I've no intention of risking my career over a silly schoolgirl crush. It was a lie, but a fictional girlfriend would suffice. After making me sweat for a few seconds, Mrs. Pritchard delivered a warm smile.
You understand why I had to ask, don't you? You've got a bright future ahead of you. I'll be making a record of our conversation and noting your concerns. If there's anything I can do, my door is open.
I leaned across the table and reached out to shake her hand.
Thanks. I appreciate your support.
I said my goodbyes, knowing that as far as Emma was concerned, I was playing a dangerous game. My footsteps echoed as I strode down the corridor to my classroom, inhaling the smell of gym clothes and well-thumbed books. A door slammed in the distance as the last of the students hurried to class. How I loved this arena, and the prospect of being delivered a batch of fresh-faced teenagers each year. But for now, my focus was on Emma, because I was not quite finished with her yet. My chat with the head had made me realize Emma's work wasn't up to scratch, and wouldn't be making the art exhibition after all. I would enjoy teasing her tomorrow. My little puppet on a string.
Chapter 43. Alex. 2017.
Inhaling the comforting scent of freshly ground coffee, I pretended for just a few minutes that everything was under control. A shaft of long overdue sunlight flooded in through the window of Costa Coffee, and I basked in its heat as I queued, waiting for our drinks to be made.
Alex?
Teresa spoke, touching me on the forearm. A smile graced my lips.
Thanks for coming. I ordered you a coffee. I haven't got long, I'm afraid.
She eyed me warily. Her shoulder-length blonde hair was tied back into a short ponytail, and she looked smart and efficient in the black trouser suit she wore for work. I joined her at the quietest table I could find.
As I passed her the shortbread biscuits, I thought of how nice it was not to receive a look of disdain in return. Food had always been a battlefield for Emma, its very presence bringing instant unease. Teresa took a bite, a little finger wiping away the trail of crumbs from the corner of her mouth. "It's Emma," I said. "I need your help. She's relapsing, and I don't know what to do."
"Is this about what happened to Jamie?"
she said, her eyebrows knitted in concern. "Partly," I said. There was so much more to Emma's eating disorder than food alone. It stole her concentration, making her physically and mentally unwell. I listlessly stirred my coffee, feeling the burden heavy on my shoulders. "I caught her throwing up in the toilet again the other night. She goes from binging to barely eating at all. I'm worried it's taking her focus from Jamie. He could have been run over yesterday."
"You need to be there for her."
With the pad of her finger, Teresa picked at the leftover crumbs on the table and deposited them on her plate.
"What happened with Jamie was an accident, but if you treat her like she's some god-awful person, that'll cause her to relapse even more."
She brushed the crumbs from her fingers, finally meeting my eye.
"Emma suffered from anxiety all her life. It's like this tireless voice in her head, always judging, always pointing out her flaws. You need to be louder than the voice. Tell her what an amazing person she is."
I frowned. How could I tell her that after Emma's confession? Such a declaration would feel like a lie. "What happened to Jamie? He could have died. I should have been there. Why didn't she call me?" The memory stabbed my heart. "I've never done anything to make her scared of me."
"You're looking at it from the wrong perspective. It's not about you. It's about what's going on in here."
Teresa tapped the side of her forehead.
"Besides, you need to be talking to each other, not me."
She gave me a look that suggested she knew more than she was letting on. I knew I was pushing the boundaries of our friendship, going behind Emma's back for advice.
"She's not sleeping," I said, my voice racked with concern. "And when she does, she's plagued with nightmares. She's paranoid too, thinks the world is out to get her. I've searched online. Apparently, eating disorders can be sparked by mental health problems. What if there's a more serious underlying cause? I can't relax when she's with Jamie. I'm scared of what might happen when they're alone."
"What are you going to do? Keep her under house arrest?"
Teresa said. I thought of how difficult I'd found it to let Emma take Jamie to school that morning. "Of course not. I just want to keep both of them safe." Teresa nodded glumly.
"I've spoken to her about her eating, but I'm not sure if she's in control anymore."
My throat felt tight as I swallowed, and I took a mouthful of coffee to ease the passage of my words. "I knew she had problems when she was young, but I didn't realize the full extent. And all this stuff with Luke, she thinks he's coming to get her. Do you think he could be stalking her again after all these years?" I wanted to tell her about my meeting in Leeds, but I needed to gauge her reaction. She was Emma's sister, and her loyalty must surely be with her. Teresa took my hand.
"Come on now, that's silly talk. Luke's not back. Emma's just being paranoid. You're a strong man, Alex. You'll get through this."
I squared my shoulders. Teresa was right. I had to find a way to fix this. I'd hoped that, when we moved, we could start again. But the nearer we get to leaving, the worse things become.
"You can't walk away from your demons,"
Teresa said, her eyes glazing over.
"They'll catch up with you in the end."
She seemed to snap out of her trance and took a deep breath.
"I don't make a habit of interfering in people's relationships, but I'm not going to stand by and let everything fall apart."
I rubbed my chin, feeling two-day-old bristles. I was in dire need of a shave. "She got a silent call when I was in Leeds. She said you had some sunflowers delivered to the shop too. She thinks history's repeating itself, and Luke is to blame for Jamie almost getting run over.
At the mention of this, Teresa's face turned grim.
She told you all that?
She frowned.
You don't want her going back there. What happened with Luke affected us all.
Well, she told me something, I said. And I hate to say it, but I'm not sure how much of it is the truth. I repeated Emma's account, apart from the murder, of course. I desperately wanted Teresa to say it was true, that her sister had been a victim in all of this. Perhaps then I could move on, forget about what Luke Priestwood had said, and put all thoughts of Jamie not being mine behind me. Teresa sipped her coffee, her elbows at right angles, her body tense. As I finished the story, I searched her face for answers. Her jaw was set tight, her gaze on the table. I knew without asking that my wife had been lying to me. The thing is, I said, I've heard other things about Emma and Luke, and it's a completely different account. Believe me, I'd love to forget the whole thing, but now it's affecting our family. Even social services are involved. I have to keep digging until I find out what's going on. This is where I need your help. Nobody knows Emma like you do. Teresa shifted in her seat.
I can't bear to see what's happening to the three of you. But if you tell Emma what I've said, she won't confide in me again.
We both want what's best for her. Please. You have my word. Whatever you tell me is strictly between us. I realized my voice was pleading, and in a way I was dreading what she was going to say. Teresa opened her mouth to speak, then paused as a group of noisy teenagers passed our table in search of somewhere to sit. Chairs rattled as they took a seat in the corner, and when they were finally out of earshot, she spoke.
There's someone very important that we have to remember in all of this, and that's Jamie. I don't want him growing up like Emma did, in a disruptive household with a mum and dad arguing all the time. It was easier for me because I was hardly ever there. I'll always regret not watching out for Emma. But it's not too late for Jamie. He's entitled to a normal upbringing, and I don't want to see him suffer.
She leaned forward, narrowing the gap between us.
I've watched Emma bounce back all her life. But with all of this going on, I don't think there's any more bounce left. You're right. She needs help.
Teresa rested a hand on my forearm.
You've got to get away from that house.
I will. But first of all, I need to know what happened with Luke. She nodded her head solemnly.
Will you promise to stand by her? To keep the family together? I can't bear to think of her raising Jamie alone.
Of course. You know how much they mean to me. I wouldn't be meeting you if I had any intention of leaving. Teresa drew her hand away and took her jacket from the back of her chair.
Then I think it's time you knew the truth. But not here. Let's go for a walk.
Chapter 44. Emma, 2017. His eyes wide with excitement, Jamie had reveled in our bus excursion to Colchester. I felt compelled to use public transport, much to Alex's relief. I saw the way he had been looking at me, observing my behavior for clues that I was going mad. I regretted my confession and all the intimate moments when I had discussed my eating disorder, telling him about the voice in my head. Everybody heard voices, and most were like mine, brutal and unkind. I only had to listen to my clients in the bridal shop as they chatted about diets and body image to know where their harshest critics lived. But I had to maintain control. What happened to Jamie must never happen again. As I walked into town, PC Bakewell's words rebounded in my memory. I would not be so lucky the next time around. For now, Jamie was safely ensconced in nursery school, seemingly none the worse for wear. A flush had risen to my chest as I explained our near miss to Mairead, the nursery head.
She had treated me with compassion, offering to hold another teddy bear's picnic to make up for the one Jamie had missed. Such warmth had not been extended by my husband. I knew he was trying not to blame me for the incident in the car park, but I sensed an underlying resentment just the same. The problem with having something precious was the very real fear of losing it, and as I checked my phone, I was more aware of that now than ever. I opened up the Friend Finder app to check Alex's whereabouts, praying that I was wrong. He had said that he would be spending the day in his old office, tying up loose ends before returning to his new role. But the map on my phone stated he was in Costa Coffee in town. I bit my lip as I sent a text. "Jamie's fine. He loved the bus ride. Did you get to work okay? Love you. XXX." The response was almost immediate, stopping me in my tracks. "That's great. Yes, no problems. Up to my eyes in it. Speak soon. XXX." My husband was lying to me. Slowly, I slipped through the Odeon cinema entrance so as not to be spotted as I cast an eye over the coffee shop patrons. The two businesses worked in tandem. Alex and I had many happy dates here before Jamie was born. But today's visit was one he had not seen fit to disclose to me. He was taking a chance coming here, relying upon my routine of opening the bridal shop on time. I peeped around the corner to find him sitting on the sofa, his back turned to me as he sat with a blonde woman in an armchair. I tried to make out her features, but from my vantage point, I could only see the top of her head. As their hands touched from across the table, I felt bile rise in my throat. He did not touch colleagues like that. This was too intimate a meeting to be work. My insecurities grew. Was he having an affair? Why else had he lied, saying he was at work? Had my inadequacies pushed him away into the arms of another? Just how long had this been going on? Questions fired in my mind like poison arrows, making me feel sick to the core. Picking up a free newspaper, I slid into a nearby seat. Time was against me. Customers would complain if I opened up late. I peered over the paper, fury blooming inside me as I watched Alex lean in for a hug. It was only as the woman leaned forward that I realized the mystery date was my sister. What was she doing with Alex? Confusion wormed its way into my brain. She hadn't mentioned this to me. I watched, transfixed, as they parted, she patting him on the shoulder, then Alex touching her arm. I lowered the paper and checked my watch. It was time for me to go. I had to get to work and act as if it were a normal day. I would decide what to do once I had listened to what she had to say. I did not know which was worse, the thought of them plotting about what to do with me behind my back, or finding comfort in each other's arms. Slipping outside, I could not stop myself from following a little longer. Swerving busy pedestrians, I kept my distance, wondering if Alex and Teresa were making a detour to the shop. Perhaps I had got it wrong. Maybe they were planning a surprise to take me out for the day. Teresa linked Alex's arm through hers as she tottered down the street in her new trouser suit and heels. My face soured as they walked the path to Colchester Castle, the place I used to go with Luke. The lilt of laughter carried on the air, and I realized that it was coming from Alex. I had not heard him laugh like that with me in such a long time. I turned away, tears stinging my eyes. Why were two of the people I loved most in the world meeting behind my back? My arms swinging by my side, I strode towards my shop in haste. I would put on a brave face, pretend nothing had happened, and wait for them to come to me with the truth.
Chapter 45. Alex. 2017. A sudden stab of guilt hit me as I replied to Emma's text. I hated deceiving her, but it was nothing compared to the web of lies that she had spun around me.
a web I was trying to battle my way through. I told myself that my secret meeting with Teresa was for her own good. All I wanted was to get to the truth. It was my job to help us move on and rebuild our lives. I knew that parenthood meant more than DNA and bloodlines, but I could not bear to discover that someone else had more claim on my son than I. Reaching across the table, Teresa had offered a sympathetic hug, having only an inkling of the tangled mess my marriage had become. "Do you mind if I take your arm?" Teresa said, wobbling slightly as she got to her feet. "It's these daft heels. They're far too high for me." As we made our way down the winding, cobbled path, she recalled stories of Emma and the lengths she used to go to when sourcing her bohemian look. Such comments brought comfort, and I laughed as she reminded me of the unique young woman I had fallen in love with in Leeds.
"It's all down to Mum, you know," Teresa said. "Whether she knows it or not, Emma's emulating her style. I remember growing up, Mum used to wear lots of tunic blouses, floppy hats, maxi print dresses, all that stuff."
This was news to me. But why would Emma want to copy your mum if she gave her such a hard time growing up?
"It wasn't all bad," Teresa said sadly. "Emma only focuses on the bad bits because she punishes herself for Mum leaving. Mum was difficult to live with, and when she got drunk, things would get a lot worse. But she would go weeks without a drink. She used to bring us crabbing down the beach, show us how to paint. Dad used to go away on his digs for weeks at a time. That's when she'd get lonely and hit the bottle. I wish..."
Teresa sighed, our conversation taking on a more serious tone. "Go on," I said, as we turned into Colchester Castle.
"I wish I could tell Emma that Mum leaving isn't her fault. Maybe if she realized that, she wouldn't feel so tormented by the past."
"It's not your mum she's worried about," I said. "It's Luke Priestwood. Right now, I'd like to focus on what happened with him."
"Well, this is where it all started," she said,
relinquishing her hold as she found a bench in the expansive grounds. Sitting here, with the birds singing and the sun warming our backs, it could almost be taken for a spring day. But my time in the sunshine was short-lived, as Teresa opened up the wounds of her past.
"After Mum left, Emma went through a rough patch. I wasn't at home very much. Neither Dad nor Emma were coping very well. Then one day Dad told me Emma had a new art teacher, and he had really turned things around."
She stared into the distance as a cool breeze played with loose strands of her hair.
"He was in his 20s, good-looking, the sort of man that girls swooned over back then. I think that's why he liked Emma. She was quiet and cautious. He befriended her and she began to open up to him. If you ask me, their problems began the moment he agreed to meet her here."
I glanced around at the castle grounds, busy with visitors making the most of the sunny day. I tried to imagine a younger version of my wife, sitting on this bench, pouring her heart out to Luke. The image would not come. For a teacher to meet a pupil after school, it was very reckless of him. She was young and vulnerable. I can't help but think he took advantage.
"You're right,"
Teresa said, her voice tinged with regret.
"And I blame myself for not picking up on it earlier on. She told me she was seeing him outside school, but when I brought it up with Dad, he said their meetings were above board."
"But they weren't," I said. "Were they?" Teresa shook her head.
"Emma fell for Luke very quickly. I'd moved out and Dad was so distant. It was hardly any wonder she attached herself to him."
"Luke shouldn't have agreed to it in the first place. Any fool can see that." I tried to keep my emotions in check. Meeting with a pupil was nothing compared to Emma trying to kill him.
"He must have got a kick out of it, somewhere along the line."
Teresa sighed at the memory, her gaze distant.
"I only had to mention his name and she would turn bright red. It was obvious she had a huge crush on him. I thought it was harmless. Dad made it sound like Luke was counseling her, and for a while she seemed happier."
My heart sank as she echoed Luke's words.
I knew something had happened because a few months later he cut off all contact with her. Suddenly, all she wanted to do was to follow him around. I had no idea how long it had been going on for, until it all came out.
So you're saying that she followed him? What about the flowers that were sent to the house?
Oh, we got flowers all right. At first, Dad thought they were from Luke. We all did. That's until we found out she was sending them to herself. Thank God we weren't into social media back then, is all I can say. At least her lies were limited to the people she told in school.
She gave me a sideways glance, regret written all over her face.
Want me to keep going?
I nodded, reminding myself that it was all in the past. Emma was a different person now. I would make her well again. Teresa took a breath, her hands lightly clasped on her lap.
She used to stalk him at school. Whenever anyone spoke to her about it, she'd put the onus back on him, saying he was stringing her along, that he loved her and wouldn't leave her alone. The more Luke tried to push her away, the more obsessed she became. It was almost tragic.
Tragic? If only she knew. My thoughts streaked through my mind. Or did she know? How much had Emma told her? In the distance, a group of mothers and toddlers assembled, one of the children shrieking as the red balloon she was holding was taken by the wind. I watched its ascent as it bobbed from left to right, its destination orchestrated by the unpredictable weather. Teresa crossed her legs, clasping her hands around her knee.
Perhaps fantasizing about Luke gave her a break from her own thoughts. Maybe it was easier to live in that fantasy world. She got over him in time. University helped. Having new friends and facing different challenges really brought her out of herself. That was the last I heard about Luke, until Dad's funeral. Maybe it was Luke who sent the flowers that time. I don't know.
She shrugged. But why? I said. The phone calls, the flowers. Why has it started up again?
I don't know. Maybe stress is the trigger. Having you and Jamie in her life has really helped her pull things together. I'm hoping when you move she'll come back to herself again.
Or she could go the other way, I said, thinking of the extent of my wife's lies. It was as though we were talking about a different person. I didn't know her at all. Yet I needed to ask Teresa outright, to hear her say the words aloud. I inhaled a deep breath, the warmth of the morning breeze giving me strength. Did they sleep together? Was that why she stalked him? Because that's what you're telling me, isn't it?
I think so,
she nodded.
And I feel bad for not believing it at first. But you have to remember Emma was just 16. Luke took advantage of her, used her for sex. That's when things turned nasty. Despite everything he'd done, Emma wasn't ready to let him go.
So, Emma was the stalker, not Luke. He had been telling the truth all along. Thoughts raced through my head as I journeyed to my office, each one accompanied by a streak of fear. Teresa loved Emma as much as I did, and I knew she would never lie about their past. Her account had me wonder if I had been married to a stranger all these years. Could Teresa have got it wrong? My shoulders fell as I realized I was coming up with excuses, rather than believing what was staring me in the face. But as I reached the office, it seemed that Teresa was not the only source of information. As I sorted through the pile of posts on my desk, I found another part of the puzzle which was entirely impartial. The blood drained from my body as I read the postmark on the envelope. Jamie's DNA results. A hard ball lodged in my throat as I picked up the envelope. Was I strong enough to cope with what was inside?
Chapter 46. Luke, 2003. My meeting with the head teacher should have been the end of it. Yet I knew I could not leave it there. Having Emma in my life was like a scabbed over wound I couldn't resist picking at.
I knew from our chat that her dad went to the pub to meet up with his cronies on a Thursday night, leaving her all alone. I had been careful to park my car away from prying eyes. Dressed in black, I was barely visible against the greying landscape, and I crept to the back of the bungalow to check Emma was alone. I held my breath as I glanced through the small square window, watching as she stirred a bubbling pot on the stove. How many times had she done the same to me? I had seen her, creeping around the perimeter of my home on the CCTV. Annoyance rose up inside me as I watched her cooking without a care in the world. Her hair was tied up with a red scarf, and she looked like she was humming a tune as she turned to scoop up a handful of chopped garlic cloves and plop them into the broth. Her long flowing skirt swayed as she moved. She appeared as if she came from a different era, an oddity in this world. But I knew what she was capable of, and I could not stay away. I tapped on her window with my knuckle, taking pleasure in making her jump out of her skin. Gripping the kitchen counter, her expression changed from fear to wonder as she realized it was me. Patting her hair and brushing off her skirt, she whirled around in a panic, taking the pot from the stove before making her way to the back door. A sudden puff of garlic-infused steam escaped into the night air as the door creaked open, and I wasted no time in walking inside. "Are you alone?" I grunted, surveying the kitchen. She nodded, her eyes wide with anticipation. After all the times I had warned her off, she must have felt as if she were dreaming, finding me in her kitchen, the two of us alone. Any other woman would have been enraged by my treatment of her, dumping her so mercilessly after I'd got what I wanted. But not Emma. I only had to click my fingers and she would be mine. That was the beauty of the troubled backstory I had fed her. I could behave exactly how I wanted, and she would put it down to me having a childhood as disturbed as her own.
"What are you doing here?"
she said, clasping and unclasping her hands. "You know why," I said, my tone deep and menacing as I backed her up against a wall. "I had a visit from the headmistress today. Have you been spreading rumors? Trying to get me the sack?" Her mouth dropped open upon hearing the accusation, and I grabbed her arms and shook to elicit a response. "Well, what have you been saying?"
Nothing,
she said.
"I swear it wasn't me, Luke. Please, I'd never do anything to hurt you."
"Really?" I said, expelling a bitter laugh. "Tell that to my dog. I only had him a year. Don't try denying it. I know it was you who let him out of the car." The truth was, I had been glad to see the back of him. I'd never liked that dog. It was my mother who thought I would benefit from having a pet. But women were attracted to animal lovers, and on this occasion I was happy to use him as leverage if it wiped the smile from Emma's face.
"It was an accident. I didn't know he was on the back seat. I saw you go into the shops. The car was unlocked and I was getting into it when he jumped out."
Her chin wobbled as she struggled to word a response.
"I panicked and ran away. I thought he'd just go home."
"But he didn't run home, did he? He ran straight under the tires of a car."
"I'm sorry,"
she wailed, her face twisted with angst.
"I feel awful for what happened. But you hurt me, Luke, more than Mum, Teresa, anyone I know. And the worst thing about it is that I..."
She gasped for breath as tears lined her eyes.
"I don't know what I've done wrong."
"You were cheap," I said, looking her up and down with disgust. "After the way you behaved, did you really think I'd be interested in anything more?" A warmth spread from within as I watched her features crumble. This was what I'd wanted when I tapped on her window pane. "Look at you, following me around, like you're trying to replace my dog. You almost lost me my job today. You better stop what you're doing or you'll come to regret it."
"Please, you don't mean that,"
she said, making no effort to escape as I edged myself closer to her. My words were saying one thing, but my body was communicating something else. Her expression was racked with confusion as I lay my hands on her shoulders, grazing her cheek with the knuckles of my right hand, just as I had that time we'd met in my classroom after lessons had ended.
"Oh, little puppy," I said. "How many times must I kick you before you stop coming back for more?"
I pressed my lips upon hers, teasing her mouth open with my tongue. For a few tantalizing seconds we entwined, my fingers caressing the back of her neck, eliciting a soft moan.
"Is this what you want?"
I whispered, planting butterfly kisses on her skin. She arched her neck to meet me, closing her eyes as my hands caressed her back. Pulling away, I tutted as she wrapped her hands around me, trying to draw me near. Grasping her wrists, I pushed her away. I wiped my mouth to remove all traces of her from my lips.
"Like I said, cheap. Harass me again and I'll call the police."
"No!"
she screamed.
"You can't do this to me! I won't let you!
But her words were cut short as I wrapped both my hands around her throat, pinning her up against the wall.
"You don't call the shots here. I do. Say one word to jeopardize my job, and I'll leave you so nobody will ever look at you again. Understand?"
Emma spluttered a cough as I released my grip, the fear in her eyes telling me all I needed to know. I was the one in control, not her. And if I wanted her, I would click my fingers and watch her come running. Not that I would be calling any time soon. I had another prize in mind. Closing the back door behind me, I disappeared into the night, leaving a broken little girl behind.
Chapter 47, Emma, 2003. The floorboards creaked from my movement, and I climbed onto my bed, gripping my phone as the mattress bounced lightly beneath my weight. I sat, legs splayed amongst the remnants of things I had collected over the school year. A piece of paper Luke had scribbled on, then thrown in the bin. A pebble from the gravel yard of his home. I knew I had been taking a risk in returning, but I ventured there only when I knew Luke and his family were away. Shame fell heavy as I remembered clambering through his open bedroom window on the ground floor. If he only knew, that would have blown up in my face for sure. Yet it had been a bittersweet torture, lying on his bed and spending time amongst his things, inhaling his scent from the pillow on his bed. It made me feel closer to him, less alone. I returned my gaze to the bent-up photo I had found in his bedroom drawer. I had taped a picture of me over the girl he was standing with. My gaze fell on the old clipping from the local newspaper about the school art exhibition I was excluded from. My bedspread was covered with things that whispered his name. I clutched the cordless phone in my hand, my fingers stiff from repetitively dialing his mobile phone. It had been easy to disguise my tears from my father, blaming my puffy eyes on a bout of hay fever. Not that he had noticed. Since Mum left, he wasn't really present anymore. There had been all sorts of questions asked after she disappeared, but the rumors had died down now. Mum had been vocal about leaving us well before she took the plunge, but even now, I struggled to accept she had gone for good. It was me. It had to be. I drove everybody away. Today was the first day in ages that I had attempted to cook a healthy meal. Fed up of moping around, I had cycled to the shops and bought all the ingredients myself. But now the food lay uneaten in the bottom of our rubbish bin. How could Luke be so cruel? I licked my lips, still sore from the pressure of his kiss, my tongue finding a small cut inside my gum. It had been just the same that night in the beach hut, rough and uncaring, not how I imagined my first time to be.
Yet, I longed for him, just the same. He had told me I was beautiful, made me feel as if I counted in this world. But it was all lies, just to get what he wanted. He never really loved me at all. My guts churned at the thoughts of his departure. Why would he have kissed me if he didn't care? I took a little comfort from the thought. He was slipping away, and his kiss was just a parting shot. It scared me just how empty my life would become without him. Up until now, I had fooled myself that there was still a chance for us. Following him in town, poring over his things, I knew it wasn't normal behavior. Sometimes I could justify my actions because I loved him. I knew then that I'd rather kill myself than face the thought of being without him. My heart felt as if it was breaking into tiny little splinters, and I could not take the pain anymore. I gathered my thoughts. Would that make him come to his senses? Make him fall in love with me again? It reminded me of the daisy game I used to play, plucking the petals as I recited the words. He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. I stifled a yawn. It was the middle of the night, and I had school in the morning. How was I going to face school when all the gossips in the common room now talked about me? I rubbed my throat where he had gripped me tightly, yet, in some masochistic way, I had welcomed his contact. It was rough and unloving, but the best someone like me could hope for. My relationship with Luke was the worst kind of torture. Mum's departure had cut me to the bone, but at least it had been quick, with little promise of return.
Chapter 48, Emma, 2017. Busying myself in the changing room, I carefully tidied the array of dresses that my indecisive bride had abandoned. Given it was her fourth visit, I was relieved she had finally made a decision. I checked my watch. Alex's meeting with Teresa weighed heavily on my mind, stealing my focus from the job at hand. My trance was broken as the bell rang over the door. "Only me," Teresa said brightly as she shrugged off her suit jacket. "Sorry I'm late. Oh, are you with a client?" "Just left," I said, feeling my throat constrict as I spoke. "You look good. Been shopping?" "I thought I'd make more of an effort, although I'm not sure about these heels. Cup of tea?" Teresa breezed past me into the kitchen. Did I imagine it, or had she been unable to meet my gaze? Why was she suddenly making an effort with her appearance? Suspicion coiled around me like an ugly snake, and I busied myself as I tried to hold back the spiteful comments lacing my tongue. "No thanks. I've been trying to ring Alex, but he's not answering his phone." The tinkling spoon came to a halt from the kitchen, and her response took a couple of extra seconds to come. "I wouldn't worry. He's probably with a client. Oh, Ems, have you seen the scissors? I need to snip off some tags, but they're not in the drawer here." "No," I said, almost snorting at her desperation to change the subject. But Alex was a worry not so easily shifted. He had been growing distant. When he smiled, it felt like he was putting on an act. But just the same, I found it hard to believe that he would betray me with my sister. "Are you sure you're okay?" Teresa asked, sipping her tea. She stared intensely, her eyes feeling like they were searching the very corridors of my mind. "I'm fine," I said, unwilling to elaborate. My heightened anxiety had forced me to log into the nursery's webcam 3 times already, just to make sure that Jamie was doing okay. My thoughts went round and round on a loop, and by late afternoon, I was feeling sick and emotionally drained. I had yet to bring myself to eat, but I was equally worried that if I started, I would not be able to stop. "These shoes are killing me." Sitting on the chaise longue, Teresa crossed her legs and rubbed the heel of her right foot. "We've got Bridezilla coming soon. You know how demanding she is. If you're not up to it, then I'm sure I can manage her on my own. Don't be silly, I said, my nose in the appointment book as I worked out next week's shifts. I've got this. I hope the sun shines on her wedding day, Teresa said. Otherwise she'll be blaming us for the weather, too. God, I feel sorry for that fiancé of hers. Still, he must be as much of a wanker as she is to want to spend the rest of his life with her. Not appropriate, I said, raising a smile. I often felt like the big sister in our relationship. Teresa had floated through life with a string of boyfriends, never actually committing to any one thing. We had all been thrilled when she'd finally settled down. Charles was considerably older, not what you called good-looking, but I'd had a feeling at the time that his bank balance made up for the shortfall. It was just a shame he had such a roving eye. Teresa didn't like to talk about him, and I didn't push the subject. "Where would I be without you?" she said, her smile freezing as she glanced towards the door. "Brace yourself. She's here." I took a deep breath. Flapping a polka-dot umbrella, a wide-hipped woman barged through the front door. I had some beautiful dresses for curvy brides, but Victoria had been putting on weight at a ferocious rate, and the problems began when she tried to blame the ill-fitting dresses on me. She had not held back, citing shoddy material as one of the reasons the gowns grew tighter with each fitting. I thought of my father's saying, the one he used when my mother was in a bad mood. If the cat had kittens, it would be my fault. At the time, I didn't understand what he meant. Now I was fully aware, as everyone in my life blamed all their problems on me. I plastered on a smile as I greeted Victoria, determined to make this appointment a pleasant one. "I'll do the meet and greet. You get the dress for Her Highness," Teresa whispered, probably because she could see that I was not up to pleasantries today. Victoria was her usual vocal self, her mother cowering behind her as she barked orders in her wake. "You sit there," she scowled, scraping back her plum-tinted hair, which had grown frizzy from the rain. "No, not there, stupid. Here, where the light shines properly. I want you to tell me exactly what you think." "Tell her what she wants to hear, more like," I thought to myself, as I bustled between the dresses on the hangers, looking for the tag with her name. I doubted anyone had ever dared tell Victoria what they really thought. I comforted myself that it was her final fitting, and I had preempted her weight gain by asking the seamstress to let her gown out a couple of inches more. "Here we go," I said, carrying the weighty gown in both arms. It was beautiful, one of our designer dresses that had cost me an arm and a leg. At over £2,000, it was my first brand-new rental, and it appeased Victoria that she could hire a designer dress at a fraction of the cost of buying it. "Do you want to try it on?" I said, wincing as the words left my mouth. It was just one of those things you said, but I knew she'd pick up on it straight away. "Of course I do," she said, rolling her eyes. "I've got to make sure it fits. 3 years I've been planning this day. 3 years, and of all the companies I've dealt with, I've never used one as unprofessional as yours." My smile tightened because I knew this was a lie. I had many contacts in the wedding industry, and what Victoria didn't realize is that we all discussed our clients. She had given every one of them a similar speech in the hope of a discount. I tugged at the zip, in no mood for her sniping comments today. "Here, let me give you a hand," Teresa said, as we extracted the gown from its protective covering. It sparkled beneath the light, and I found myself looking forward to seeing it on the new bride. The Prosecco was on ice, and fairy lights twinkled on the center platform, all waiting for her special moment. But it was lost on Victoria, as she greedily grabbed the dress from my hands. "Gently," I said, being rewarded with a red-faced glare. But as she pulled the gown from its encasement, she emitted an ear-piercing squeal. "What's this? My dress! What have you done to my dress?" My head swiveled from Teresa and back to Victoria. This had to be a record. Usually her complaining began when she tried the gown on. My eyes widened as Victoria plunged her fingers into what looked like torn material.
What the hell?